Little Emily biting her sister, or is teenage Barry refusing to help around the house? Consulting psychologist David Carey joins us to answer all your parenting woes. David Carey joins us once again for our parenting slot. Afternoon, David.
Hello, Sean.
First question is this. I'm writing about our 8-year-old son. He's a normal, outgoing, energetic, popular and clever child. However, in the last weeks, he started to become slightly anxious and clingy. He has also started to confess to absolutely every little piece of bad behaviour he's ever done. He's also been asking questions about girls and his body that on their own would not be of concern. We decided to talk to his teacher to see if there was anything going on at school that may be affecting him. He said they haven't yet started talking about first confession, so that's not an issue. After talking to the parents of other children in the class, it has emerged that he and his two friends have become the focus of attention of three boys in 5th and 6th class. My son says they are fine and they play with them sometimes. He did admit that they have occasionally kicked away their football. Another child in the class has said these boys are bullying them. We're extremely worried because these boys have already been in trouble for using foul language and using extremely vile sexual language towards the girls in their class. We are terrified they're having an influence on our son, exploiting him and bullying him. It is a small school and they all play together in the yard. They also go swimming as a school on Friday, and we're seriously considering not letting him go as we feel it's too dangerous.
You need more information here before you make any decisions about whether he should go swimming or not. The three boys in 5th and 6th class have been dealt with, according to you, in regards to their offensive language and behavior. Your son is saying the only thing they're doing is occasionally kicking the football away from him. That hardly constitutes bullying. Mm. But yet at the same time, his behavior is changing. He's a bit more anxious than he used to be, and now asking questions that in and of themselves would be of no concern to you, but you're putting all these things together and coming to a concern. Maybe all the pieces don't actually fit into a coherent puzzle. You may never know. I think a very good and frank conversation with class teacher is in order here, and make the request that someone who are on yard duty over the next week observe very carefully to see whether these 5th and 6th class boys are interacting fairly regularly with your own son and some of his friends. Mm. And if that's the case, they probably need to be separated because there is an age gap there, and he's only 8. They would be 11 and 12. We don't usually mix that population, but sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. I don't know what to say here because there just isn't enough standing out in this, Sean, that leads me to conclude any more than the parents can conclude anything. I do think removing him from swimming may be a bit drastic.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that singles him out. You shouldn't make a decision like that without speaking with him first anyway. Mm. I just think more information is necessary here. Go talk to teacher. Find out very clearly what's happened. You know, perhaps anecdotally, that these boys were dealt with before in regards to their offensive language. I'm sure teacher probably didn't divulge that. Maybe she did or he did. I don't know. You need more facts. Then you can create a course of action or urge the school to intervene.
If it needs be, I suppose, then perhaps talk to the person who oversees yard time to see how they interact and whether
Which
that constitutes
probably be a different teacher every day on yard duty. And maybe there's SNAs on yard duty as well from time to time, so they can be watching. You know, it's interesting that the boy himself isn't saying these other boys are bothering him. Mm. He's not reporting any serious concerns yet. So,
because you can imagine when you're younger and older kids are playing with you, you think that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
And you'd almost kind of pay the price of a little bit of low-level bullying for the honor of hanging out with the with the older kids, if that's the case.
I'd be concerned about the possible use of sexually explicit language and offensive language to 8-year-old ears. And if these boys have been called up on that once, of course, you know, it could be continuing. So you just need more info here.
Yeah.
Don't rush to conclusions and make decisions about the swimming, though.
Mm. Mm. I'm concerned about my 2-year-old daughter's behavior in creche. For 3 months now, she's been scratching other kids. This week, it has escalated as she is scratching for no reason and also lashing out at creche staff. When they try to put in her reflection time, she is such a pleasant girl at home. We've tried everything and it's getting me down.
Gosh, I don't know what's going on here any more than you do. 2-year-old daughter behavior in creche. For 3 months, she's been scratching other kids. And now you're concerned. Should have been concerned 2.5 months ago when it started. You need to talk to teachers here. Find out under what circumstances, when. Do they have any clues as to why this is happening? She's clearly distressed in the creche setting because it's not happening at home. So...
She's a 2-year-old. Maybe there's a bit of competition going on there or whatever. What's reflection time?
I don't know what that is. When they try to put her in, that must be timeout or something. Or you don't put 2-year-olds in timeout usually. Or maybe
sounds like they all have to go and meditate. Good luck with a 2-year-old doing that.
Yeah, well, that
you have to roll up a little mat and send her to crash with it.
She's pleasant at home. We've tried everything and it's getting me down. What does that mean, we've tried everything? Because you can't control in the home what happens in the school.
Yeah, because it's a completely different
dynamic. It's a completely different setting. This is a more of an issue for the creche workers and the child care workers to work in cooperation with you to try to resolve. Again, in these situations, it's always best to observe and gather information before you make a plan.
Mm.
Something is distressing this little 2-year-old. This must be new behavior, but now it's going on for 3 months, and she's scratching everyone, everywhere, even the staff when they try to put her in reflection. I wish I knew more about why she's being put into reflection time. Is that some sort of intervention because she's scratching? Or?
Mm. Michael says perhaps reflection time is a few minutes spent in front of the mirror.
Yeah, I thought of that. Who said that, Mike? Yeah. We have the same sense of humor. Yeah. That frightens me. Yeah.
Okay. I heard you talk last week about the young boy obsessed with death. My teenage daughter has the same problem with her own mortality. Any advice would be appreciated. Again, driven by anxiety, and since she was very young, we were thinking about counseling.
You need to talk to her more about what her concerns are. Sometimes this is quite normal philosophical exploration in the mind of a capable, bright, and clever child. It doesn't always represent morbidity. When adults think about their possible mortality, they're not necessarily being morbid. These are big philosophical questions. Mm. And teenagers sometimes ask the big questions. The brighter they are, the more likely they are to ask the big questions.
Yeah.
We should always be looking for other signs that the child is in some kind of distress. For example, changes in sleeping pattern, changes in eating pattern, changes in general personality and mood over time, changes in learning efficiency. All these kind of things, if there are radical changes there, point to possible distress and upset. In the absence of that, err on the more conservative side. She's reflective. Talk to her about it. Find out what's on her mind. What is she really thinking? She's... concerned about her mortality, and you're assuming.
Just wait for a few years, then you'll be concerned about your mortality.
See it through my eyes. Yeah.
But isn't it healthy actually to dwell on those, or not dwell on those things, but you know, to talk about it and confront the idea that we're mortal human beings?
Absolutely, yes. We should, as parents, always be willing to engage in conversation with the child, not to assume that there's some underlying deep-seated problem or that it's driven by anxiety. Now, maybe it is. I don't know.
Mm.
But talk to her, please. Find out what she's thinking about. How often is she thinking this? Is it bringing her down, or is she just asking the big questions, which are good questions?
Now, this person also says, and I, you know, we only get sent in what we get sent in, so we've no other information. So I don't know if I'm way off base here or not. But this parent said, you know, ends it by saying, driven by anxiety, since she was very young, we were thinking about counselling. So they haven't been to counselling, I take from that.
Yeah.
Nor have they been to anyone who says, oh, this is anxiety.
Yeah.
Is there perhaps sometimes a rush to pathologise it, both by parents and by people who work in their professions who
yes.
are keen to do that?
Yes, that is that can happen. And we had a report just this week, actually, about a potential problem that some clinicians have stated that they are diagnosing young people with conditions such as ADHD that they don't actually have in an effort to get them some extra support in school. I'm very surprised to hear that any clinician would ever admit such a thing, so I'm immediately suspicious that it may have happened or may not have happened. We have rules for diagnosis, and intriguingly, the Department of Education has rules for accepting diagnostic statements. So these things aren't just taken as if they were chipped in granite and brought down from the mountain by Moses. They are scrutinized according to rules and regulation of diagnoses and the requirements of the department. So it probably isn't happening. Sometimes we can rush into assessment. The best thing in a case like this, by the way, since you're concerned about your child, go speak to someone. Yeah. Talk to your GP, get a referral to a counselor, and talk to them about it. Sometimes in one session, when you meet the child, you can immediately find out whether there's a problem or not. Doesn't always need ongoing counseling.
Yeah.
When in doubt, check it out.
Someone says reflection time means time out. For a two-year-old,
that
really worries me. No way should a child age two be in time out. Hate to say it, but the creche can be a scary place for a small child. Could be anxiety making her lash out.
That is quite possible, and I agree with the texter there.
Our daughter, who has just turned two, constantly sucks her thumb. We ask her to stop, and she does, but then looks at us and smiles and sticks it back in again. Her thumb and nail is red raw, and the nail is out of shape. Any advice?
Oh,
Steve
gosh.
Wants to know.
Two-year-old playing the thumb-sucking game. You tell her to stop, she stops, then she smiles, plugs it back in her gob, and off we go again and again and again. Somebody write in, please, to us and text in. Let us know what a good solution for a two-year-old. You know, we do all kinds of things. We use that funny...
the stuff that tastes horrible.
The stuff that tastes horrible, and maybe that'll work at age two. Put a plaster on it, maybe that'll work. It's a soothing mechanism.
Absolutely.
Of course.
Yeah.
And at age two, is it a big problem? I don't think so. Distraction may help. Give her something else to do with her hands.
Mm-hmm.
Give her a little something, a squeezy toy or a plush toy or something to hold that perhaps can interrupt it. But then again, I'm thinking of my own granddaughter who has her little, she stopped now. She's eight. But for the ages, she sucked her thumb while holding Bobsy. Bobsy was her little, sort of a little demented-looking little lamb of some kind.
Yes.
But she would hold Bobsy with two hands and manage to suck the thumb with the other, driving my poor daughter to distraction. This went on for years. Now, around age seven, she stopped. But sometimes when she's sleepy and lying on the couch, she still does it.
Yeah.
Sucks her thumb. She's given up Bobsy, though. Poor Bobsy has been relegated to the back of the toy press where he's been forgotten.
Poor Bobsy.
Yeah.
That's showbiz Bobsy. Sorry about that. Right, we are going to take a break. After that, we're going to be talking. This is quite a serious question, really. It's how to deal with the aftermath of a very upset 16-year-old who's been groped. As I said, quite a serious question to deal with next. Could you ask David how to deal with the aftermath of my 16-year-old daughter being groped on the street twice last Saturday morning in Limerick? I've told her it's not her fault, but she's still very shaken. It's not the first time it's happened to her or her friends. It's obviously not just happening in Limerick. It's happening in Cork and Dublin too. She questions what she's done to bring it on herself.
This is terrible. First of all, it's a criminal offence, and I hope the Gardaí were alerted to this.
Mm.
Although I know sometimes people are very hesitant in these situations because the necessity of questioning the victim sometimes causes more distress than the original incident itself. So I certainly could understand if the parents were hesitant to contact the Gardaí. It is a common reaction that a young person would question themselves and wonder, what did I do to deserve this sort of behavior? Now, of course, they did nothing. The girl is a victim of what is essentially a sexual assault.
Yeah.
Now, I think it would be very, very helpful for her to speak to a counselor, someone who's very skilled in dealing with these kind of issues. You might want to ring up the Rape Crisis Center. I know this isn't a rape, but it's a sexual violation.
Yeah.
They would have a very extensive list of highly qualified practitioners in your area who can help talk to this girl. Because as parents, you're not going to be the ones to be able to break through her distress and difficulty. interesting 16-year-old girls, 16-year-old boys. They are never two of them on the same developmental level, either physically or emotionally. So we have 16-year-olds that are emotionally more like 12 and 13-year-olds. Yeah. We have 16-year-olds that act as if they're emotionally older than their age. It's an act. So we don't know a lot about this girl in terms of her overall level of development. But clearly she is the victim here. And now blaming herself, and this is common, well known in the sex assault counseling business. So she needs a bit of intervention. Does she need long-lasting psychotherapy? Probably not. But she does need someone to talk to about this, someone more than just the parents. Mm-hmm. But I really would encourage parents to think through these things and question, should I be contacting the Gardaí or not? Obviously, there are young men out there, at least one and probably more, who are doing this. She's not going to be the only victim. Yeah. It needs to be stopped. And the Gardaí are the people that are highly skilled and can put a stop to this.
It's a tricky one, though, as you say, because it might be even more distressing, and you wouldn't want your daughter, having had that horrific experience, to have yet another one.
Yeah.
Or indeed end up in court with some lawyer saying, what were you wearing?
Yeah, well, exactly. You know. I was thinking the same thing, yeah. It's a very difficult decision for parents. Now, this has happened more than once to her, however. So, double trauma here. I can only but imagine she must be terribly hurt, distressed, anxious, confused, fearful when she goes out on the street again. She needs some help. So let's just forget about the Gardaí in this instance. Get your daughter to someone whom she can speak with about the incidents and who can help her work through her inner belief that somehow, in some way, she brought this on herself. She did not. She is the victim of what probably is a random assault.
On that point, and this is something I've struggled to deal with myself, and I don't have an answer to it, that when you have teenage girls going out and they go, I'm going to wear this, and you say, okay, you're a young woman, you're as equal to a man, you should not feel in any way oppressed as to what you choose to wear or not wear. But another part of your brain knows what teenage boys are like and the way they're going to react. So you feel that anxiety.
Yeah.
And there's no right answer to this. It's
there is no right answer. It's a family decision. But one of the problems we have at societal level, Sean, is we're not focusing enough on the boys.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the problem. I mean, A, keep your hands to yourself. B, just because a young woman, teenage or older, dresses in an attractive way does not mean they are soliciting sexual advances of any kind. It means they want to look pretty in their own eyes. Mm. And that's a good thing, and it makes them feel good, and they should be left alone. We really need to focus much more on the boys. We really do.
Our oldest girl is 5 and a half. She is in high infants at school. Over the last 18 months, we find her wanting to control situations in the home with her siblings, who are 4, her sister, and 2, her brother. In particular, she gets upset, troublesome, unreasonable if we give time to her siblings, in particular going into huge strops, blaming her siblings for something they never did. We were conscious in making sure that we gave her one-to-one time as she grew up. She's doing okay in school, but can be plain nasty with her friends in school, as well as being their very best friend. We are concerned that she's lacking in self-confidence or self-esteem, which is causing these issues.
Isn't that interesting? We're back to this. If someone behaves poorly, it's because they have low self-esteem.
Yeah.
I would like to help parents understand that one's self-esteem can be incredibly intact, yet at the same time, one can be an arrogant, obnoxious pain in the bum.
Yes.
So self-esteem is not always the root cause. In regards to her trying to dominate and control things with the 4-year-old sister and 2-year-old brother, that's the time for the magic sentence. Can I remind people? I am really surprised to see that the 3 of you can't get along and play together without hurting each other. Most children your age have already learned how to do that. Mm. And then shut up and walk away and don't look back and listen for what happens. It works like magic, which is why it is called the magic sentence. You probably need to have a little talk with her about being less nasty to her friends. Are you observing this? Are you seeing it? Or are you hearing about it? What is nasty? I don't know. Mm. Is she doing and saying nasty things? Is she excluding other children, etc.? So there's a lot to look into here, a lot. We don't want to go down the road of thinking she needs counseling for her self-esteem. Her self-esteem could very possibly be spuriously elevated and think, and she may think she's superior to everyone else. Self-esteem issues aren't always arising from low self-esteem.
Yeah.
They can arise
maybe too
from
high,
artificially
yes.
high self-esteem.
Mm.
So it does need some looking at. In the family home, use the magic sentence and step out of the battles because there's too many dynamics flying around with three children.
Yeah.
You don't know who's setting whom up for appearing as though they're the perpetrator while someone else is the victim, and it can all get very confusing. In terms of school, talk to teacher. I want to know what's happening in that classroom. What's happening on the yard? Is this occasional dominance, or is she consistently dominating play with other children? If she is, she needs some help in learning how to play on a more equitable basis. These are skills that can be learned.
I could do with some advice. I bring up my two children alone. I have no trouble with them, and I'm very proud of them. But I feel so sad and hurt for them that their dad, my ex-husband, has very little to do with them. He sees them about twice a year, and that is only for 20 minutes at a time. I feel so sad that he treats them like they don't exist. He does pay maintenance, as per court, and it really pains him to do this. He has plenty of money, so that is no issue. What can I do for them? Sometimes I feel overwhelmed. I do all the school runs, parent-teacher meetings, doctors, hospitals, and everything. I know I am not the only one. What do I do when he doesn't call them on their birthdays? No card, no acknowledgement that they exist, and I have to explain that I love them and they feel like he doesn't love them. My 8-year-old now doesn't care, but my 14-year-old is very hurt.
That's terrible, and not an uncommon scenario. Doesn't always have to be the dad. It can be the mom. I don't think you need to say too much to them. You need to listen to them and comfort them. The 14-year-old is hurt by this. He or she can't comprehend it very well. Listen carefully to what he or she is saying. Ask some questions. Tell them you are there for them. Don't talk the dad down. They'll work it out themselves. The 14-year-old may have to come to an acknowledgement when he's in his young 20s that the father's just a bum. Mm. And that's the way it goes sometimes. And we can get over these things. Most important thing, don't put the dad down. Be sensitive. Listen to the child. Listen to the children. There is nothing you can do. This is that man's pattern of behavior. Maybe it will change. Maybe it won't. Sometimes it's better if it doesn't, actually, because it's interesting what happens when a parent has been absent in the life of a child for many, many years, and then suddenly decides they want to come back in.
Yeah.
That can be even more confusing and more hurtful because obviously the child's going to be, where were you? And now you want back.
Yeah, and they're strangers to each other.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I would do, continue doing what you're doing. It's clear from the message that this is a very good and loving mom who's quite attentive to the needs of the children, who as a single parent is struggling and doing the best, and I'd say it's pretty darn good what she appears to be doing. It's not an easy job. Be proud of yourself. You are making up for the hurt that will be accrued from the absence of the father figure. It will be all right in the long run. Listen and talk to the 14-year-old, though.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to imagine, though, why the father would do that. I can't imagine any kind of set of hurt or psychological circumstances where, I didn't contact my children for...
Sometimes people are wounded themselves.
Well, yeah, I can imagine so. But even no matter how wounded you are, to take that out on your children.
The children come first. It must be put first before us. Some people are unable to do that. It's very easy to point fingers. I referred to him as a bum, so here am I, a finger pointer. Who am I to say or do such a thing? It's hurtful for the children. I don't know the gentleman in question. Maybe he never had it in him to be a good father because perhaps he was never loved sufficiently. A lot of this can go back, you know, to previous generations. Hurt breeds hurt sometimes.
Yeah.
But one thing we know, people are often saved by one loving person, one who's there to listen and care for you and simply say sometimes, I know it hurts like hell. I know it, but I'm here for you. Let's talk about it. Sit by me. We don't even have to talk. Come sit here. Let's watch a television show together. That's healing in and of itself. That's what this mom is giving. Mm-hmm. And that will be sufficient in the long run.
Just going back to the subject of thumb sucking, one texter says, I've two avid thumb sucking girls, age 1 and 3. I've no problem with them having this habit, but I'm putting an end to it when school starts. I've already told my 3-year-old this. As soon as she starts school with the big boys and girls, the thumb sucking must stop. Until then, I'm happy for her to do this. Ooh. It's kind of like, maybe this is a terrible, I know this is a terrible comparison, but this is like asking toddlers to give up cigarettes. It's. But it's kind of like that because there's an addictive quality to it.
Yeah. Well, the problem is, you know, okay, now when you go to big boy and girl school, you're going to stop sucking your thumb. Yeah. Well, I hope that works out for you.
Yeah. Fee in Cork says, I have sock puppets that you stitch to the pajamas so that they can't suck their thumbs at night. It's all awards and praise for trying to break the habit rather than criticizing when they do suck. That really gets results.
Good advice.
So, good advice. Little Emily biting her sister, or is teenage Barry refusing to help around the house? Consulting psychologist David Carey joins us to answer all your parenting woes.